Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Know Your Foe episode in preparation for that Lions game on Monday Night Football. Joining me to talk about the Lions is Coach DC of All 22 Films. Now, you know him as a Ravens analyst primarily, but he also, of course, does clips and analysis of the Detroit Lions. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. First of all, thank you for having me on. Second of all, I'm sorry that earlier in the year when you reached out, I wasn't able to accommodate. I love coming on, but just as we were talking about pre-show, I get so many requests now that it's tough to live up to all of them. And with my quote regular job to juggle that too. So I'm just glad to be here for this one.
Understood. And coach, no problem when you can be on. That's great. And let me know if you ever need me. On the other side of this, though, we're talking about the Detroit Lions here and trying to get an idea of their scheme and personnel. Lions coming off a 52-21 win over the Bears. They didn't really show up for their week one game. They lost 27-13 to the Packers. But at this last week, Jared Goff nearly perfect at 156.0, 5 touchdowns and no interceptions, even made Lamar's game look bad by comparison. But let's start with him. Who is he as a quarterback at this point in his career?
Extremely prepared. I can't think of two or three other quarterbacks in the league that I get the opportunity to watch who are as prepared pre-snap and have the ability to get their team in the right look. I've suspected for about a year and a half that they've got two or three plays called in the huddle on pretty much every snap. And I can't prove that. I can't prove that I'm, quote, right. There has been some information come out recently that the new offensive coordinator, John Morton, has retained that ability. You know, sometimes those things show up in a game and they're obvious. Okay, it's obvious they changed the play there. It's obvious. But Goff is one, and when you watch his work against the Vikings, you know, coordinated by Brian Flores, that he runs a unique scheme, and it's very confusing to some quarterbacks at times. I know it hasn't been as successful this year. Goff is one of the guys that really had a great handle on attacking it, and he just seems super prepared. I almost can kind of think that we're fortunate to get him early in the season, as opposed to week 7, 8, 9, where maybe there's more data on what we are going to line up in and what we're going to play in certain parts of the field. I almost wonder if we have a little bit of an edge there because in my perception or my opinion, I don't see two or three guys in the league who are more prepared for what they're going to see on a snap by snap basis than Jared Goff.
The Ravens showed him nothing last week in that Cleveland game. They only played three packages the entire game. One was that jumbo snap on 3rd and 1. So that's a big nothing in terms of preparing for this game. They had 5 dime snaps and they won all 5 of them. A lot of 16 yards, but 5 defensive wins, 4 off the fields. And then they had every other snap the entire game was a standard nickel. Like yep. It's no variation at all. It's almost like they're playing preseason football to have that. They played every snap as in base or standard nickel during the preseason. But no base in this game. No, I mean, they basically thumbed their nose at the Cleveland Browns and said, you're not going to run the football against
on 12. Yeah. 12 personnel with Fanning and,
and
Njoku. And Njoku is just either not willing or not capable of being used as a blocker at the point of attack. A glorified, you know, boundary side receiver, if you ask me. So I agree, you know, totally there. I thought that in week one, we did not do a, we didn't really attempt to provide any level of obfuscation to Josh Allen. Pretty much what we lined up in is what we played. This past week against the Browns, there was definitely some steps forward in, okay, we're lined up in this, and then we play something else. I saw that multiple times, particularly, you know, that stretch. Hey, Flacco played horrible, and the Browns are headed for a long, long season, especially offensively. You know, I don't see them winning five games. We did a nice job in that first six possessions of giving Flacco this look and then confusing, I don't want to say confusing him, elongating the time for which he would need to process the coverage such that he was more willing as the game progressed to just take the quick check down or the quick throw. It almost seemed like he mentally was giving in.
Well, a lot of what the Ravens did on defense in terms of variation was in scheme. So they blitzed guys from off ball 14 times in the game. They had seven sim pressures in the game. They did some stunting that wasn't as successful, but the blitzes were tremendously successful. Flacco threw for 1.9 yards per play. It was 14 singles. So they weren't trying to get, generally to get five even rushing the quarterback. They rushed 4.12 men per play on average for the whole game, whereas the Browns were up around 4.5 or 4.6 in this game. So, you know, much heavier blitz heavier rush here. But let's talk about what the Lions are going to bring against the Ravens, because I think that's what people are tuning in to this show for. And in this case, it's how will Goff process a defense that looks vanilla a lot of the times at the snap? And it may not, because, you know, they present much more credible run and pass threats than what the Browns had. But how is Goff likely to process what the Ravens are trying to do?
They are somewhat similar to Munkin's attack in the last couple of years in that they are very boundary focused. Attacking to the boundary away from the nickel defender. And I, you know, depending on what occurs with Marlon this week in practice and his availability, if he's not able to go, I think you're going to see a ton of 11 personnel because they're going to want to get deeper into our DB rotation, particularly if Marlon and Jair, neither one of them play, right? Not that we don't have good young players, but from their perspective, those young players are not proven. A boundary side attack, I think, presents a very acute threat to this Ravens defense, because the guys that are going to attack into the boundary in terms of the pass game and the run game, Jahmyr Gibbs, Sam Laporta, they'll annihilate the guys we have playing at will linebacker. Buchanan and Simpson will not match up with either one of those guys in a pass coverage situation. So I think to some extent you may see, depending on what hash the ball is on, because, you know, Kyle Hamilton plays to the left and Starks plays to the right. Depending on what hash the ball is on, you may see Hamilton spinning down to the boundary more, and which, you know, some people would say, well, now we're going to be in a one high coverage. Yeah, but it's one high post snap. Pre snap is what we really want to lengthen Goff's amount of time. And when I said confuse earlier for Flacco, that's probably the wrong word. We're looking to lengthen the amount of time that it takes him to process something such that the pass rush, you know, kind of gets here. So that boundary side attack is the first thing I'm looking for, number one. Number two, the second thing I'm looking for is if Marlon can go, he's going to be matched up with St. Brown. And, you know, for my money, if I can pick 11 offensive players in this league and go 11 personnel, St. Brown is one of my 11. He's that good. And now, you know, so Marlon is superb as well. So that would be a great matchup to watch from a fan perspective. And I would say if we have Marlon available and he's at or close to 100%, he can slug it out with St. Brown. You know, he's agile enough and smart enough. St. Brown's a special talent, if you ask me. And I think him and Gibbs are really the engine of the whole thing, along with Goff. You know, St. Brown is a great player on third down, and Gibbs is someone who, on any touch, you know, once he gets to fourth gear, he really doesn't have a fourth gear. He's got like first gear, third gear, fifth gear. Gibbs, it's a different type of speed when Gibbs has got the ball in his hand. It's a superb offense from a talent perspective. They've got concerns in their fan base about the offensive line, rightfully so. But I think there's a tremendous amount of talent there. Are they going to score 50 points a game that often this year? No, they're not. The Bears were extremely susceptible to passes over the middle, and Goff on time with no pressure in his face is going to chew that area of the field up.
All right, let's move on to the offensive line. Take us through from left to right who their starters are and how you handicap their play.
Yeah, you got Decker Mahogany. Christian Mahogany's a second-year guard. He was a six-round pick from Boston College. I was really disappointed that we didn't take a look at.
Yeah, I liked him last year.
Yeah, I remember you talking about him. In fact, it's, you know, there's a thing out there that supposedly like his right leg is a little bit longer than the left leg, so it was a concern from a medical standpoint, you know, long-term. He's a talented guy, had a really good 2023 season at Boston College, I think, or maybe it was 2022. But in any case, Glasgow is now their center, and then Tate Radledge, the guy from Georgia, superb RAS score at the combine. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine, yep.
Sorry, my mic is a little old school. But Radledge is the right guard. Of course, he's next to Sewell. I think there's some concerns about Mahogany this week. He suffered an injury, I believe, third quarter last week. I don't know if he returned. And even if he didn't return, I believe he gets injured at the point that it's 31-14 over the Bears. And it was an onslaught in the third quarter. It went from 28-14 to 31-14 to 38-14 in an instant, you know, in like a 2-minute and 30-second stretch or something. So maybe Mahogany could have come back in if it was a more competitive situation. Their offensive line has less depth than they have in previous seasons. I would say they're somewhat comparable to us in that they're extremely thin on the offensive line for guys that are proven to be able to go in there and be effective. So were Mahogany to not be available, I think that's a really big loss for them. Decker, to me, is the guy at the left tackle position. He's had a really great career, and I think he's a really good player. But when he's been beaten, it's been by guys that can present a really nice power rush. And so, you know, over there off their left side, I wonder who we're going to match up with him. Green, Owe, Robinson, whatever.
Yeah, Owe seems to make a lot of sense. I mean, Robinson will be there on early downs, but Owe seems to make a lot of sense with the additional bulk he's put on this year as a guy. I mean, I remember you used to complain all the time about how Owe couldn't get away from his own bull rush, that they didn't really – he didn't have the other moves, and hopefully Chuck Smith has changed some of that, but he's become a much more powerful man and a powerful pass rusher this year.
Been a fun player to watch the last year plus. I mean, you know, complaints about him from other people notwithstanding, I've been really happy with his play. I thought he got free two times on free rushes against the Browns, and I thought he got, you know, three wins, one of which forced a hold by the backup left tackle.
Yep.
I thought he's playing well. We had two stunts last week against the Browns that, you know, whoever designed it on our defensive staff, the Browns couldn't pick it up. The Browns couldn't pick it up. It was the same stunt, same two stunts. And I will say this, the O-line coach for the Lions is fantastic, Hank Fraley. And I wouldn't anticipate the key to getting quick pressure on Goff to be so easy to open that door like it was last week against the Browns. I couldn't think lower of the Browns offensive design and what they're doing. And the Lions are on the other end of the spectrum.
I think the player who I would say, my observation, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. It looked to me like Cleveland committed very early in this game. There's one particular play where it showed up more than anywhere else, where they committed to double team Travis Jones, just basically no matter what. He's an idea to double team player anyway, but there are times, particularly when you have an extra rusher on that left side, where you need to peel off him and make a block. Yeah. And they committed to doubles, and the time that they rushed a defensive back through the B gap, and it might have been Martin, and he had to be, or Awuzie, and he had to be picked up. And Owe ran free, and that was because the left guard was Petonio was completely committed to the double team. And if Flacco can't stand pressure in his face, not that he's any really great shakes at getting away from it at this point in his life, you know, from the blind side, but that's a tough position to put your quarterback in. If you just cannot block the guy and you have to commit to blocking two on him.
I think this is a really even matchup if you're talking about the Lions offensive line against our defensive front. And I always look at personnel groups, like how are they going to match up? And Laporta is very versatile. So, you know, their 11 personnel group, they do a really nice job with him in the run game. You know, I would say he's above average to good in a split zone type looks where he's, you know, going across the heels of the offensive line to kick out the defensive end. But where he's exceptional is, and I've done two videos on this recently. I'll try to share it, or you can share it if you want, in what I would call a wind back zone. It's a designed play where he's set to the left of the offense, and the immediate flow for the running back in the offensive line is all to the right. And so he's on the quote wrong side. But what they do is the left tackle away from the run flow sets the defensive end on the backside, and then Laporta kind of inserts into that backside B gap. Hopefully I'm explaining this in a way that makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah, I think so. Go ahead.
And then since the linebackers are all flowing with the running back, you know, to the offense's right, the defense's left, Laporta doesn't go lead block. He just basically washes the guide. He takes the linebacker where they want him to go. And that has been a, man, Ken, that concept has been probably a 7-8 yards per play type thing in the last 2 years. And the Packers in week one identified the formation twice. And both times that the Lions lined up in it, you could see Quay Walker kick the D tackle over, move himself over so Laporta couldn't get him, and they just annihilated it. And so for me, while I did say earlier, I wonder if we have some advantages defensively that Goff may not have enough data to pick up on our tendencies. I think I would assume that the guys that work in our staff did a ton of work on the Lions offense in the offseason and have things prepared from a formation standpoint. That particular formation is 12 personnel, and it's called broken bunch closed, or just bunch closed. And so that one, you see that, I can tell you there's two plays in that formation, and you can stop both of them with the same thing the Packers did. So I'm interested to see our level of preparation. Are we just calling defensive plays? Or are we calling a defensive play but checking out of it because of the formation and the specific or unique threat that it presents?
And I guess fairly basic game theory, I'll tell you that the Lions know now they need to have a third play from that formation if they if the Packers are able to diagnose it so easily. So so we'll see. I'll be interested in seeing how that plays out. On the interior, the Matt at BK Jones double has been extremely, extremely good. They're great when those two are on the field. Yep. Peebles individually has been fine, but the Peebles Washington pairing is a lot weaker.
On the field, you mean? Yeah.
But when they're together on the field, that's 42 out of the 43 snaps Matt Ibiki played in this game. They had more than that, including penalties, but you know, all but one snap they played together. It's an unbelievable advantage for Matt Ibiki to have mostly single teams. And when they did double him, they had to bring the right tackle over to do it with the right guard.
Yeah, I'm going to be really interested to see how their guards, who I think really highly of Mahogany, he's at the beginning stages of his career. He's a, you know, it's a first-year starter. And then Radledge, I was super excited about Radledge, the possibility of him, you know, being around later than, you never know what's going to happen in the draft. And you always think, okay, what range could a guy get drafted in? People say, oh, he's a third round grade. Like, I hate that shit. You know, yeah. I look at ranges where I think they could be selected. And for me, I thought Radledge was like a 55 to 75 range. And I was like, okay, maybe late second round. Well, we all know what happened late second round. I'm not trading that late second round pick for anything, you know, for what we got this year. But Radledge to me will be an interesting matchup with Matt Ibiki and Jones, because he's a classically trained, very balanced, versatile right guard. Nonetheless, I think we've got two devastating talents in there with Matt Ibiki and Jones. And so I feel like absent combo blocks and doubles, we're going to have a great situation to disrupt them, even out of 11 personnel.
All right, let's move on to the skill position players. We did talk about Jahmyr Gibbs already. He's got 13 catches already, but for only 3.2 yards per catch. Obviously, he's catching probably with a negative ADOT. I didn't check. He also, this is incredible to me, 4 missed tackles forced on those 13 catches, and he's still only got 41 total yards.
Yeah, the Packers did a great job. Packers did a great job of really just closing him down. It seemed like, you know how last week it was obvious that Kyle and the inside linebackers were hedging over towards Njoku's side. I mean, we definitely made sure that we addressed Njoku catching short passes and turning it into longer gains. The Packers did the same thing with Gibbs. I mean, anywhere Gibbs went, there was two jerseys there, which was, you know, really cool to see from a Packers perspective. They played great defense. Gibbs is just, he's lightning in a bottle. And I'm really interested to see if they go with, they do have something they've talked about the whole offseason. Haven't seen a lot of it so far, which is Gibbs and Montgomery on the field at the same time. So they're two talented tailbacks. And
Pony, yeah.
Yeah, what a lot of people call is Pony 21. So those two with Laporta. So I'm really interested to see how we handle that if that gets on the field. I only had, like, last year, like, seven plays of that happening for the Lions in the in the film that I had classified. So Gibbs is just a unique talent, man. They hit a home run with that. Not that Bijan Robinson wouldn't have been a great pick, but trading back, acquiring the pick to take Brian Branch, so you get Brian Branch and Jahmyr Gibbs, that was just, you know, amazing.
No, that obviously is a winning pair. Jameson Williams, now we talked a little bit about Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think most people are familiar with him as a receiver anyway. He's been the primary threat. But Jameson Williams is having a great yards per target year already. It is early. Only about 9 targets or 11 targets, something like that so far. But he's looked outstanding.
Yeah, and they traded away Tim Patrick because they've got a young ex-receiver who's big, 6'4", 6'5", great athletic traits and skills, didn't have a single drop apparently at Arkansas. That's Isaac Tesla or Tesla, however you pronounce it. So, but they've been rotating the X, and I think there's some advantages there. You know, if you face a team with Davante Adams, right, Davante Adams is the X. If you face, you know, meaning he's going to be the backside, he's going to be generally into the boundary. The Lions system, at least as it's presented so far, there simultaneously is no X receiver, and all three of them can be an X. So they're somewhat interchangeable. And I, from my own experience at the high school level, basically, it makes it a little tougher because you're calling a coverage and you don't know who the X receiver is. It could be St. Brown. It could be Williams. Williams is a burner. Everybody knows that. He's definitely grown into what people foresaw, you know, that year at Alabama after he left Ohio State. He's grown into that role. He had a rough week one. He, you know, lined up off sides on the first snap of the season, missed a block on the same play, missed a block, stepped out of bounds on a reverse, got pushed out of bounds on another outside release go. I'm not running down Jameson Williams. I would take him on my team, but the week one beginning for him was tough. And he rebounded last week. He had 2 catches. He had a 64-yarder and a 44-yarder. He's an explosive guy, and when he's on the field, you've got to have someone guarding him who's got the ability to deal with that speed. He's a real issue. He's a threat in their offense.
Well, let's start with that, because the Ravens are a team that traditionally, and I'm not saying they might not play some matchup or some traveling against the Lions, but they traditionally play their corners to a fixed side.
Yep,
and it's been Wiggins at left corner and Chidobe Awuzie at right corner so far this year with Humphrey in the slot. If they continue with that, how would you think the Lions would best like to take advantage of that in terms of the receiver they want on each side of the field?
Yeah, it's a little different, I would say, offensively than just your classic X receiver who, you know, maybe he runs a deep comeback, a back shoulder fade, a go route, a post, whatever. They're more into, you know, deep crossing or deep over routes. And that can be from even the X, you know, so Goff is exceptional. If you take the field, and I probably should have provided you with a graphic or something, but if you take the field numerically and from left to right for the offense, let's say the intermediate routes and the middle of the field, the exact middle is 3. So then to the right, you've got 2 zones, 4 and 5. And to the left, you've got zones 1 and 2. Goff is amazing in zone 3 and 4. So middle of the field to middle of the field, right. Almost like envision, you know, a baseball hitter's hot zone. You know, they see all, you know, all those different colors or whatever. His hot zone is 3 and 4. Maybe I didn't set up the explanation for that well, but that equates to what they run a lot of, which is those deep overs that end up at the top of that route. So basically just between the intermediate depth and the deep area. And that's more so what you get out of the X receiver a lot of times. Now they've got apparently a gem. I mean, Tesla has an insane one-handed catch against the Packers in week one. If you guys haven't seen that, like, just search Isaac Tesla touchdown Packers. The game is over. It's 27-6 at that point. They actually ruled it incomplete first. And then last week, he's got a one-handed catch along the right sideline against Tariq Stevenson, who's a quality corner for the Bears. Didn't play well last week, but I don't know what the ceiling is for this guy, Tesla. He's, you know, 6'4". Great 40 time. They got a good receiving group, Ken, and they're interchangeable to an extent. And that to me almost presents as more dangerous than hey, Davante Adams is the X. We know where he's going to be. You know, I think Morton and their offensive staff is a little bit more of a wild card right now for us to prepare for than if Ben Johnson had returned, because Ben Johnson's system was in place for 2+ years. Morton's got a little, it's a little different flavor. It's like a band, a great band, still around traveling, but the guitarist, you know, is no longer with them, and they've picked up a new guy who's badass guitarist as well. So it sounds a little different.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's fair enough. And I guess just moving from Roman to Monken has some.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything from stress to sleepless nights with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Opponents that were kept in the Ravens' DNA. And
absolutely.
Were changed, of course.
Harbaugh, right, please.
We need to move on to the defense here, but I'll ask one last question about the offense first, and that is there any kind of go-to play that is Goff's favorite? So is it any sort of play action or a boot to get that deep over going? Or is it, you know, kind of leading me to believe that the Ravens' weakness that they've had at certainly at times over the last two seasons has been behind the linebackers and in front of the safeties? I don't know that that's as serious a problem with Starks and Hamilton, but, you know, depending on where Hamilton's lined up, it may not be Hamilton. Yep. May not be coming downhill on the ball. Is that the area where you're saying Goff is likely to challenge?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that area is heavy usage for him in terms of targets and then production as well. Yeah. A couple of things to maybe answer your question. Hopefully ball on the left hash, Jameson Williams is the X into the boundary, and you got motion from the field into the boundary. That's oftentimes a reverse. That's oftentimes a reverse to Williams, and they run it to the field, to the wide side of the field. They're not going to run it into the boundary. I mean, who runs a reverse into the boundary? That's one setup that if you're a Ravens fan and you see the ball on the left hash, Jameson Williams is the X set into the boundaries. You know, just think about that. Maybe glance your eyes there, and you might be able to pick it up a little sooner than the people that are sitting around you. Additional to that, the 12 personnel where one tight end is in line. You know, people call him an inline tight end, but there's no receiver to his side, and then it's bunched to the other side. And the second tight end is like in the quote slot, attached to the other tackle. I call that broken bunch close. And I don't know. Do you just post this on like places where people can listen to podcasts and such? Or
that's right. I mean, it's on YouTube and it's on podcast platforms, and it's on the website. You can play it directly from there. So there's multiple places.
Okay. So I'll give you, if you don't mind, I'll give you a link and you can just, I've got a video about that exact formation. That's one that I referred to earlier. It's got two plays really out of it. And then Goff on play action boot stuff is he's one of those quarterbacks that he's able to throw to his left and to his right, you know, equally well. Some guys in the NFL can't do that. Right-handed quarterbacks struggle moving to their left. Mm-hmm. He's really good on play action.
Let's rewind that for a second. You're saying Goff can move left and still throw normally. Are you saying, because that's death for a right-handed quarterback?
Yeah. Some guys, like, for example, last week, Sam Darnold had two throws, you know, boot against the Steelers, booting out to his left. One of them, he takes a shot from Cam Hayward on and completes it to JSN, ironically, on a deep over concept, the same type of thing we're talking about. And Goff is one of those quarterbacks, you know, his background with the Rams and then the continuing of a similar flavored offense with Ben Johnson and Dan Campbell. He's equally adept moving to his left and throwing you know, those guys, it's an offense that's more under centered, but one specific thing you can look for, third and eight is a potential run play for this team. They'll run it on third and eight because they don't mind going forward on fourth and three.
Okay. So you're talking primarily in plus territory, or you're saying even Dan Campbell,
anywhere,
well known for doing it from midfield, from his own 45 sometimes?
Anywhere.
Okay.
Right, they've gone for it last year, maybe 2 years ago, 2023 Chargers. They went for it fourth and three from like their own 37 in the second quarter. Mm-hmm. And so they don't mind, setting up a fourth and two, fourth and three with their third and eight call. It, for whatever reason, I don't know what their data shows that they'll do that. It's one of those things that when you see, you know, when you see it, it sticks out.
Okay. And, just going back to the 2023 game with the Lions, they were 2 of 6 on third down against the Ravens. And that started in the first half. They went for it, I think, on fourth and eight or fourth and 10, down 28-0 in the first half. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a mentality thing for them. And, you know, I'm not saying that I'm willing to do that as a coach if I ever get the opportunity to coach again. What I think I have observed is they've normalized going for it on fourth and three to their team. And this is me perceiving maybe a little bit more than anyone's explained it to me, but I've certainly watched enough of their games. It doesn't seem like fourth and three is a situation that causes anyone's blood pressure to go up in week 13, because they've already gone for it, you know, 8, 10, 12 times prior to that. And so that, I guess, is a better answer than I tried to provide a couple of times earlier, in that, you know, third and eight is a possible still rundown for them because they're comfortable going forward on fourth and three or fourth and two.
This sounds like a lot like the 2019 Ravens in terms of their aggressiveness on fourth down too, but probably even more extreme.
Good point. Yeah.
All right, let's roll on to the defense here for a second. Let's talk, for starters, about their most common pass defense looks. Do they use a dime on obvious passing situations, or are they a committed nickel team? How do they typically line up?
So, Ken, you'll like this, and maybe the data that you have access to is lines up with it or does not. They're one of the teams that will play their base 4-3 structure against 11 personnel the most. And again, it's another thing where when you see it, you go, wait a minute, I'm seeing 4-3 personnel and for the defense, and I'm seeing three wide receivers on the field for the offense. That's not normal at the NFL level or even college football. You know, you're normally getting a 100% nickel 4-2-5 response from 11 personnel for the offense. So they will do that. Now, the reason is because they've got a pretty good group of inside linebackers, but they got a depth problem now that could trickle down and affect their inside linebackers. Jack Campbell and Alex Anzalone are really good. You know, Anzalone starts for our team 100% of the plays right now at will linebacker. He's two or three levels above Simpson and Buchanan. He covers tight ends. I'll repeat that again. He covers tight ends in man-to-man and by design. You know, they will literally walk him over, put him on a tight end in his face and say, this is man. Now, I have, in terms of like you, I think you said earlier, game theory, I wonder if sometimes they're kind of like eliciting a throw to the tight end there, you know, as a, you know, hey, you've got a better opportunity to get something done over here. But really good coverage guy, good against the run. Derek Barnes is another hybrid will linebacker / OLB edge defender, but he doesn't have great pass rush production in his career in the NFL, and I wouldn't anticipate him having pass rush production against us, but they're going to use him a lot, particularly at boundary side defensive end. So they'll oftentimes put Hutchinson to the field in passing situations, and Barnes will be the boundary side D end, and they drop him out. So you will not see dime at all from them.
Okay.
You will see nickel against 11, and you might actually see 4-3 against 11, which is shocking, right?
That is absurd. I get back coach up on this. It's basically, it is an automatic nickel in the NFL, or dime if the passing down is appropriate. If the offense can't really run the ball, you'd prefer even to have dime as opposed to your second will linebacker on the field for almost every NFL team. It'd be the really rare one. And if what you're describing is on the money, that Anzalone's better than whatever option they have for a third safety or even a fourth corner on the field.
Yeah, it was. I think last year, to an extent, that might have been Anzalone was out for a significant amount of time too. Everyone was out for the Lions defense last year. But This is also made possible because Brian Branch can play safety. He can play nickel corner. If you needed Brian Branch to play outside corner, he could. He's just a football player and a great one. I think Brian Branch probably starts for every single team in the NFL. He's that good. Now, he wasn't named one of the top 100 players in the league, which just does a horrible job of justifying or supporting paying any attention to that list, because Branch should have been on that list. He's a fan. And that's why I think they can get away with 4-3 sometimes. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to see that every time, right? We go 11 personnel on 3rd and 12. Of course, they're going to have nickel in. But if we go 11 personnel on 3rd and 3, they may match with their 4-3 personnel. And I think they have the same problems that we do. And that's let me rephrase that. They have a different problem than we do matching up. Their problem is they major in man-to-man. And we've got, right now through two games, an absolute man-to-man destroyer in Zay Flowers. And I like their corners, especially Amik Robertson, the slot. I just don't think they have anyone who's going to match up with Zay. If they show us man and say, this is man, they're not the same quality and aggressive type team out of man as the Browns are, because the pass rush threat is a 180-degree difference. So this is a team that their structure, their system, they play man, and they'll show it to you by formation. And so I feel like we should have a good opportunity to exploit some of that.
I'm going to guess we have a tendency breaker from the Lions in this game, with all due respect, Coach, because Lamar Jackson does not really allow for man coverages in the same way. If you do man, you have to then aggressively spy him.
That's right.
One man is not enough. Sometimes, you know, there have been teams who played two guys, you know, bracketing Lamar off the line of scrimmage and you know, pretending one would rush a passer or, you know, go short rushing the passer because they want to bracket Lamar. I don't know if they'll be able to pull that off or not in terms of playing the kind of man defense you're describing.
Yeah, the early in the game in 2023. Now, if you recall, one of their starting corners got injured the day before. I don't even think they were practicing. Jerry Jacobs got injured the day before, and they had Will Harris playing outside corner, and he's not an outside corner. So they were really short-handed from a defensive standpoint in the coverage area. So they did play a little bit more man, or excuse me, they did line up in a little bit more zone in that 2023 matchup than I expected. This is a man team. They major in it. It's what they do. And in fact, on third and they're, you know, Ken, you'll get this, and obviously the listeners will. Sometimes when you watch their defense and the coverages they call, it almost is like, hey, is Wink Martindale in charge of that defense? Because there's that much of a reliance on man. Now, the difference here for me is, you know, Kirby Joseph is their free safety, and he is a spectacular ball hawk and someone that if you're going to, you know, okay, we've got man here, I'm going to look there and I'm going to go there. If Kirby Joseph is in that area, you've got problems. Look at his stats. Incredible production, great interception last week against the Bears, Caleb Williams, you know, a ball that he shouldn't have thrown. So their system works, man. Their system works. Look at the, I think it was QBR allowed last year, or quarterback rating allowed, one of those two.
Passer rating.
Yeah. Was exceptional for the Lions. I want to say it was top three in the NFL.
I'm sure it was. He had a huge interception year and was up there in the DPOY rankings and whatnot. I'll take a look at while we're talking about the next
thing. No, I mean team-wide. Team-wide, I'm talking about. Team-wide, feel free to, you know, interrupt me when you find it. It's quarterback rating allowed or passer rating allowed was extremely low, obviously, up until the playoff loss in the divisional round.
90.4 during the regular season, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not great, but I don't know what the average in the league is. It's probably over 90 now.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But it was surprising for me because – Aaron Glenn was just one of those guys. He's like, hey, this is what we're going to play, and you've got to be able to play it. And that's kind of the attitude that the new defensive coordinator has too, Kelvin Shepard. It's really unique. They've got two new coordinators, one on offense and one on defense. And Shepard, I think, has pretty much retained the same system. They're really reliant on six-man pressures where they're bringing both inside linebackers. And I think, just like you kind of mentioned earlier, I think – there has to be some kind of adjustment or dialing back of that, because I just foresee, okay, you blitz both inside linebackers, you know, Zay, Bateman, or someone across the middle and catches it and off and running. So it's difficult for me to imagine. They've got good corners. I like them. Don't get me wrong, but I just feel like you're putting a lot of strain on them against the personnel that we put out there offensively in terms of our receivers and our tight ends.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. That's something we'll certainly look for. So we heard a little bit about Kirby Joseph. You didn't really talk about the rest of the defensive backs, but you can do that if you want right now. And then I want to finish up with the defensive line.
The one of the unique signings that I think, you know, occurred for them was last year before 2024, Amik Robertson, who had played with the Raiders. And the year before with the Raiders, he had played like 7 games at outside corner, and then their nickel, I believe, got injured. So they just slid him over to nickel, the Raiders, and he played well. Well, last year, the Lions did that in reverse. Amik played nickel for them, dedicated nickel, when all other corners were, were healthy. But when all other corners went down, so many of them went down. In fact, their whole defense pretty much, suffered catastrophic injuries. He slid over to outside corner, and man, he had the game of the year against Justin Jefferson in week 18, really competitive. They're both actually from Louisiana. Apparently they'd played against each other, I think, in high school. Amik went to Louisiana Tech. He's a really good corner. For me, it's just difficult to see him just matching up with Zay. You know, we motion Zay across the free field, so he's getting a free release. As highly as I think of Amik, because of his versatility, if an outside corner goes down, they can just move him outside, and he plays well. I just struggle to see anyone matching up with Zay in these heavily reliant man situations. And I could be way wrong. You know, we could talk later next week, and it works out completely in their favor. But it's not like the Browns, who play a lot of man, and they have a monster defensive end that wins in the pass rush, and defensive tackles who do too. This is not the same thing, because the Lions pass rush is really deficient.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about the defensive line now. That's really the last element, and it's something that bothered the Ravens. One thing you mentioned earlier is bothering me a little bit. Jackson has been good against the blitz, and he's been bad against the blitz his entire career. So he's had both extremes. But this last week against the Browns, he had a lot of trouble. When they rushed 6, it was only 4 plays, but 0 net yards. And it was 3.9 yards per play on the 12 plays where they rushed 5+. So they rushed a lot. It was very effective. And that was one of the big things that was kind of mitigating some of the – keeping drives from being sustained. I'll say it was an effective – extra man pressure. And with man, I presume that the Lions are able to do that fairly often against most opponents, and probably will be able to do that less often against Lamar. But the teams that have done it in the past, if you go back to that Miami game 4 years ago now, I guess it is, mm-hmm. where they showed the 40 cover 0 looks.
Mm-hmm.
There have been times certainly when Lamar's had problems with that.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, stick split 0 is not, It's you know, this is not the topic or the time for it, but stick split 0 is actually not cover 0. It looks like man, but we're all just reacting to where the quarterback looks. So there's some intricacies there, I guess, and you've got the defensive tackles dropping out. It basically is kind of like the glitch blitz a little bit, but in any case, that's not what the Lions do. The Lions are like walking the corners up. They're in your face. They're contesting. They're basically playing like Aaron Glenn did, right? Aaron Glenn was a combative, small, feisty, tough-ass corner with great ball skills, and that's kind of what they've collected there. DJ Reed's a good corner. He's very balanced. Amik Robertson, like I talked about, and then Terrion Arnold on the other side. Everybody's talking about, what he's allowed and whatnot. The dude played hurt against the Packers. That was pretty obvious to anyone who watched. I think that their weakness is their pass rush. From a defensive standpoint, they got good secondary. I mean, they got 2 all pro caliber guys at safety in Branch and Joseph. They got really good linebackers, and DJ Reader's a good defensive tackle. He gave us trouble for 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
They drafted Tyleek Williams. He's a really good player. Aiden Hutchinson. We all know how well he was playing last year. Defensive player of the year candidate before he went out for injury. They've got a blind spot at the other defensive end. They really do. They're relying on Marcus Davenport. Sometimes you get NFL, people won't like hearing it, NFL franchises get a blind spot. Ours is interior offensive line, maybe. Theirs is their pass rusher opposite Aiden Hutchinson. They didn't draft one when they had multiple opportunities to do so until the 6th round. Hassanin from Boise State, they've since had the injury settle with him. Davenport got injured last week. I don't know what his status will be for this week. If Davenport doesn't go, they're really thin at defensive end.
People remember the name Davenport, and they'll say, where did I hear that before? When the Saints moved up to number 14 ahead of the Ravens in the 2018 draft, they took Davenport when a lot of people thought, and a lot of people thought this, particularly in New Orleans, that they should have taken Lamar Jackson with that pick.
Mm, wow. Yeah. Wow. And look, I'm rooting for him to he's had a lot of injuries the last 3 or 4 years. And there's obviously concerns from Ravens fan base about a particular player on our offensive line. Fine. Mm-hmm. The Lions fan base has the same concerns about edge rusher in that they didn't draft one this year until the sixth round. They didn't draft one the year before. They didn't. Now, they also have a lot of cap room, and some Lions fans think they were giving Davenport a chance. Let's see if this works. We'll get to a certain point in the season and maybe we'll make an acquisition. That's fine. I know Brad Holmes from if he sees the need to make a move and they want somebody, he'll go do it. He's not a stick and pick guy in the draft, and he's not like that in free agency either, but they got no cap space at all for 2026. So whoever they try to acquire, if that is their chosen path, can only be an expiring contract. And so I think they're playing a dangerous game,
right?
Because it's a very different defense than the Browns. They do not have the ability to generate pass rush easily with a four-man rush. They're going to have to dedicate or allocate more people, and I just think they're going to have real trouble matching up with us. Zay has really annihilated man coverage this year. He took advantage of Newsom last week. He beat Christian Benford, for the Bills, and multiple guys the week before. Yeah, Bateman is not doing much so far through two games. Okay, fine. DeAndre Hopkins looks pretty good on deep balls. Andrews hasn't done anything, and we're still scoring 40 points a game. I'm concerned from a Lions perspective if they're going to play that man structure and just show it to us. This is what we're playing, that they're not going to have trouble matching up early and maybe have to adjust.
Yeah, there's none of the pieces really fit together in terms of the efficiency of the offense, the inability to sustain drives because of the barbell of results that they've had, a lot of negative plays, but also a lot of positive ones. They haven't even really been penalized that much. They didn't get penalized at all on defense this last week, which was really good and a big underappreciated part of the defensive effort. But let's ask the question I always ask guests on this show is, who are the one player on each side of the ball who matches up best against what the Ravens present?
I mean, there's just no way for me to not include Brian Branch here. He is that good. And, Ravens fans won't like hearing this, but there's two safeties that I look at as guys who you could put them anywhere and they could be effective. And that's Kyle Hamilton and Brian Branch. I'm not saying Branch is as good as Hamilton. I think Hamilton is one of those guys that in eight different directions, coming forward, straight forward, downhill, at angles, exceptional, laterally, sideways, exceptional, backwards, plays really well. Branch to me has six of those directional things, that whereas Hamilton has eight. And so it's close, for me. I would say Branch is a guy who can just change the game in one play, an interception, a forced fumble. I mean, go look at his forced fumble last week against DeAndre Swift. He is 1,000% committed to coming downhill there. He just sells out. He really plays like a linebacker at the safety position, but he can cover. He's the guy on the defensive side. And then Ken, it's a tough question to answer on the offensive side because St. Brown can go 10 catches on 11 targets and six or seven of those be third down conversions. But Jameson Williams and Jahmyr Gibbs can score in one play. I think we're set up for a really great game. I really do. I do not see a repeat of 2023 at all. Mm-hmm. I didn't see that coming.
Nobody did. Either. I mean, I got that question right at the game, from somebody who's visiting the stands. Did you see this coming? I was like, no, of course not.
Yeah. So it's, you asked for one each. I'll say Brian Branch and Jahmyr Gibbs / Jameson Williams, because those guys can score in a single play and that could change the dynamic of a game.
All right. That's great. Coach, really appreciate talking football with you. Thank you. Thanks for stepping in and doing this Lions Know Your Foe episode. Tell folks where they can find your work and follow you on Twitter if that's what they want to do.
Yeah, man. All 22 films on YouTube and the same on Twitter. And if you can't find me there, it really doesn't matter because I'm just not able to be as active on Twitter or X now as I would like to be. I wish. First of all, thank you for inviting me because you had invited me before for week one and I was unable to live up to that. So this was great to have a little bit of time and hey, we're almost out of here in under 50 minutes.
Yeah, that is amazing for us. I'll tell you that we can do this. We'll plan it for 30 and get done at 50. But we'll make sure we get you on hopefully some date that meets your schedule later in the year for offense or defense. Either one is always great with you, Coach. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. As always, please pass the show along to a friend. Like and subscribe if you're out there on YouTube. And if you don't mind, write us a 5-star 50-word review on your favorite podcast platform. Coach, thanks again for joining us.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. All right.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.